On planet Earth, at the peak of human ingenuity, we still haven't managed to save ourselves from... Two brave souls have decided to take on our enemy to prevent the world from falling into the...
Let motherfuckers feel the climate change. Let motherfuckers feel the climate change. Let motherfuckers feel the climate change.
Hi, I'm JP Hurst.
And I'm Casey Snow.
And today we are going to dig a little deeper into that.
Maximum carbon sinkhole.
Hello, sinkholers. It's been a minute.
Oh yeah, it's been a little while.
Casey and I have been busy. That will happen from time to time here on Maximum Carbon Sinkhole. If you don't hear from us, don't worry. For those of you following us in real time, up to date on the latest and greatest episode, we've been planting.
That's true. It's not like we're like a fly-by-night podcast situation here. We are going to be here. It's just sometimes we aren't.
And we're in this for the long haul.
Right. This is episode 20, isn't it?
This is episode 20.
That's a big deal, I think.
Yeah. And when we first started recording, I don't know that we thought we would make it to 20 episodes, but this has become our go-to source of artistic enlightenment, which references our talk today, doesn't it, Casey?
That's right.
And we have set about, at least in our small corner of the world, participating in a lifetime of artistic projects. And so given that this is our 20th episode, we thought that today would be a good day to discuss art in the second world and how to visualize it.
And if we were any good at capitalism, we would be having a 20th episode celebration, which included maybe selling some art.
Right. And here you don't ever have to worry about us selling art, but we may ask you to contribute some art. In any case, if we go dark for a bit, it's only because we are setting about the project of a lifetime, which is figuring out how to adapt in this motherfucking clusterfuck. So if you don't hear from us for a couple weeks, we may be planting outside. This is important work. We tend to eat the things that we plant.
Yep.
And or we could be taking about some other projects that we have planned in the works. And we've said all along, we didn't know who we would be talking to as we threw up the smoke signal. But some of you have written in that have made our day every time we read your emails, and we would like to start doing community and group art projects.
That's right. And we have forged some really great relationships already from listeners, so that's a really cool thing.
That's right. And in retrospect, going silent for a couple of weeks has been really good for the inbox, and we have a smattering of great emails to share later in the show.
That's right.
Today's topic is about visualizing the second world and calling for an art-led adaptation, calling all artists to reorient to helping the rest of humanity visualize what is possible. KC, is visualizing the future a big role for artists?
Well, it's not a marketable role.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem for a lot of artists because they're like, but I need to eat, need to pay rent or whatever the fuck they got to do in capitalism. And so therefore I need to be able to sell my art or become an insurance salesman.
The three topics we're going to set about today include the need for art. You're going to hear us advocate for art
as a societal need.
Yeah. And we're also going to discuss the problems with art in general today and why it's failing to meet that need. Then we're going to discuss the second world aesthetic. That's maybe the third time you've heard me say that. We're going to get into what we mean by second world. And then to round us out, we're going to give some examples by discipline of some art that we think would help visualize what the fuck would help.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, art is an interesting thing because it does things on both sides. So the artist, it's a way of them expressing whatever they see or whatever they want or whatever they need or whatever the society needs or whatever. But then the people that get to consume that art, have the opportunity to have their eyes opened, right? Their hearts broken or otherwise, you know, there's all these feelings, and that's the thing. And art today largely is just a dollar figure.
You're saying that art has been commercialized.
Sellout. It's just a sellout of everything.
Top to bottom, big artists, small artists,
yeah.
Any discipline.
It doesn't matter.
What is art? Is art dead? It doesn't exist anymore, right?
It is dead. It is dead. Or it's dying, maybe. That's better. I think there is still art out there, but the people that are really doing it, like, they're not allowed to be seen. The machine doesn't want true art because true art says, kill the machine and maybe your neighbor.
All right, let's dive into a couple points. It feels like a little no shit, but I like to go over it anyway. How has the machine consumed art the way it's consumed everything else?
Well, it's commodified it.
Mm-hmm.
It's turned art into something that, you know, the rich pay oodles of money for things that you would never guess because they've been chosen by whomever, because they went to the right school and had the right relatives or whatever. And then that art is then copied and done over cheaply and mass produced so that it's so diluted that it doesn't have any meaning except for, wow, check out that poster, or check out that painting, or check out that canvas that isn't even painted. It's just printed in some mass huge thing. And there's no meaning anymore except for the symbolism of, oh, you know, Scott's got art on his wall, you know?
Yeah, the collection of art.
It's just another posturing. It's just another feather.
It's just another signal that I'm a connoisseur of something, right. Or I have the means to purchase this, or I have the means to collect this.
Right, and they make art for everybody, right? So it goes from, like, you know, the weird fine art that nobody would really truly get, and it's just like pandered to because that's what rich people are collecting at this time and place, you know, where what's selling at Sotheby's, you know. And then there's the you know, country good old cheap, you know, reusable art, which is it's not recycled materials. It's just made to look like recycled materials, which is fucking insane because think of all the recycling we have. But that's a whole different thing.
Yeah, my favorite version of that art is at the big box home improvement stores, which we are not too good to frequent. And they have the huge bins, just the cardboard bins with all the mass-produced pictures.
Insanity.
And I especially love it when it's, like, let's say a picture of a chalkboard with some saying written on it, like, live, love your best day in a heart that's a kitchen of a house or whatever
yeah,
the fuck it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's a hand-drawn on some slate chalkboard, but then it's a picture of that, and then it's mass-produced, printed.
Right.
And then people put that up, and they're like,
this is
who I
am. I got
that country aesthetic.
Right, like, right, no. Mm, right.
Okay.
Right.
And maybe perhaps too, the art being commercialized and most artists being sellouts and art being dead and there's no true art anymore. This is a common lament. Like a lot of things we discuss on the podcast.
It's a little cliche even.
It is a little cliche. And we want to take that head on. We say, I know, bro. We hear you.
Yeah.
We hear you. But what we're saying is we think that there's a course to chart. And we think that there's a path, there's a small opening for us to reclaim what art is and what it can do in the context of adapting for the clusterfuck that is weighing down on us all right now.
Right. I think what I'm looking specifically to do is to, so art is that thing, you know, where you see the sticker at a crosswalk and you're like, oh, that speaks to me. I get it. I'm connected with this climate change art shit, second world. Holy shit. I got to learn more about this. And it's because the thing is we need to find each other. And art is another way to find each other. It's also another way to recruit people to say, hey, we need to do something different. This world isn't working for everybody. So let's work together to see if we can do something different, whatever.
And like most things in our life right now in civilization, whether we want to or not, we're going to have to figure out a way to rebuild this shit.
Yeah.
We're going to have to figure out a way to grow food, to live in communities.
Assuming
again.
We don't ruin it to the point that there is no rebuilding, which is still a possibility.
And these challenges are going to be forced upon us in various ways across the globe. Again, whether we want to or not. So we better start figuring it out now.
And the biggest thing is what is needed to rebuild is creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And so somebody can say, well, what the fuck good is a painting going to do when there's no food? Well, a creative person might find a way to get food, because painting isn't just painting. It's seeing something that nobody else sees and then making it.
And that I think would be hard to underscore enough times.
Exactly.
The new world, the second world.
The second world.
The world between the first world and the third world. Terms we know that have been depreciated.
Right.
As in into developed and emerging world.
Right.
We'd like to reclaim this too and say the second world. We feel like the second world has some answers for us.
Yeah. And that's where we came up with second world, as we were talking about how, you know, clearly the first world's fucked. The third world's fucked. What the fuck? Why isn't there a second world?
Yeah.
It seems like a good balance. Like, okay, we're not drinking our own shit,
mm-hmm.
but we're also not like flushing our shit in a bunch of water in a 4,000 square foot home.
Yeah. That's a great encapsulation.
Something
Casey.
In between. There has to be. And it's the second world. And that's the world that artists need to help envision and force it into other people, these fucking sheep's minds, so they can see that no, giving things up doesn't mean sacrifice, it means change.
And to break people out of their own despair and to break them out of their routine, we need creative people.
Yep.
To show us the possibilities.
That's right.
So it doesn't feel like a sacrifice. So it feels like an actual fucking improvement, which is what it can be. And it's been for us in trying to create our own version Correct. Of the second world,
yeah.
including this strange podcast you're listening to
I
right
know,
now.
Right? Just wait till you hear the inserts in this one. It's going to blow your fucking mind.
Speaking of inserts, we've got JA from the UK, our UK contributor here to talk about why Banksy fucking sucks.
Banksy. First, can I just say that when Banksy did the stuffed animals go to the slaughterhouse, like I was like, this is awesome. Oh my God. And I'm watching it. I'm like, this is brilliant. And then I'm like, nobody fucking cares. This is fucking stupid. This is just like a media grab. This is just fucking dumb.
Yeah. It was disappointing watching that and seeing it turn into yet just another thing people could take selfies in front of.
Yeah.
Just spectacle. Yeah. Anyway, here's JA.
Yeah. Banksy sucks. And it's kind of not his fault that he sucks, because everything he does has just been absorbed by capitalism. I mean, he should have stayed on the street, really. It's when he started taking it in the galleries, it all started going wrong. I mean, some of it, I'm looking at a book called Wall and Peace. Yeah, I mean, he likes the text puns as well as the visual puns. But some of it's actually quite good. Some of it is also just insultingly cynical. I mean, yeah, there's a piece. Yeah, he's done a version of the famous Vietnam War photograph of the girl walking down the street who's been napalmed, and she's holding Ronald McDonald's hand, and it's just I don't know. It's just there's something just so sort of basic about it, and there's another one where he handed out these really cynical plaques to people who went on the 2003 march to try and stop the invasion of Iraq. And you just think, whose side are you on? Anyway, I think the last word on Banksy, really, you just need to go to one of these motherfuckers' houses who's got one of his pieces hanging up and ask their thoughts about how the machine's working, because you can guarantee it's working out pretty well for them. If you don't agree with me, I know what I'm talking about when it comes to art, because I've got a certificate, so fuck off.
J.A., if you recall, shared his story of dropping out in episode 11, it was, I believe. He and his wife are both trained fine artists, and they lived on a boat. They lived on a boat outside of London, tried to do the starving artist thing and some London lofts and all that stuff. They've retreated to the countryside, similar to how we have,
yeah.
and are now content making their own sort of art, but also thinking about the state of the world, the state of art, and the sorry state of both of those things. In the email that J.A. recently sent us, I just wanted to read a couple lines from this. Here's my take in defense of the artists who do try and make a stand. It's impossible, currently, in the first world, as the art market is part of the capitalist machine and sucks up any opposition. Again, that's not just art, but
right.
it includes art.
Right.
Further, it's impossible to lift a middle finger and be part of the current art world if you are not in the art market, as no one will pay attention.
Right.
That's your point.
You're chosen. You have to be chosen.
So it's hard to do stuff outside of the machine and say, like, we're still doing art because right. art, to get any sort of currency, just mind currency,
right.
has to be part of the monetary currency market. Mm-hmm. That's a very good point, J.A. And 30 says, this is my favorite one. Digital goodies like smartphones have destroyed the power of images to hold people's attention, as images are now consumed like anything else. Case in point, he says, melting chunks of Arctic glaciers placed outside the Tate Modern in London. It was just another, what we just said about Banksy, great selfie opportunity. People taking selfies in front of the big ice cube.
Well, it turns the art into them. Like the art, they're like, well, this is about me and the art, not the art and what it's saying about the world. And that's an insane thing. We're actually creating more narcissistic people that already exist.
And that is not what art should be doing.
No.
And so just to wrap that up, he says, so this becomes a race to the bottom of ever increasing spectacle. I've read stories of other museums and galleries just mothballing entire collections of stuff to bring in the wildest and weirdest sculpture, three-dimensional shit. It's all selfie. And in like very upfront saying, we're having to adapt to the modern taste
of the modern museum
visitor.
Yeah.
And basically that's just everybody is here to take a selfie to say, I was at the fucking museum. So the cooler backgrounds we have for selfies, the better.
Right. And that's just scary, honestly.
So in a time which we, again, would argue that artists are needed to visualize a different way of living, you have museums, these supposed purveyors of the current artistic mindset, actually running the other direction.
Exactly.
And simply bending to the will
because they
of
want
a sick
money.
Culture.
Because they want money. They are just as much part of the machine. The museum is no longer this place that holds the sacred artist and doesn't let, you know, the machine pull it down, even though it's against the religion or against whatever king or, you know, that's kind of what it's supposed to be, is this place where it's safe to express yourself. It's not true anymore. What it is it's safe to selfie. That's it.
And you're hearing us argue and say art should be the middle finger.
Absolutely.
You're not going to hear a big art history lesson from us, because I don't have that kind of fucking education.
And I don't have that patience. I don't care.
However,
I just don't.
Yeah, as you just mentioned there, if we think about, you know, the origins of art, at least since the Enlightenment, mm-hmm. some of the first art that has endured to today is Shakespeare and the early bards of the court finding subversive ways to talk shit to the king's face.
No shit. And the thing that makes me insane about that is I think of those actors, right, who had to be fucking badasses because they're like, we might lose our heads tonight.
And some did.
Can you imagine if it's like, hey, Leo DiCaprio, we need you to come and do this really controversial thing that might get you killed. He'd be like, no.
Yeah, no thanks.
Oh, it will save the planet? No.
That reminds me of Team America and the South Park guys taking the piss on the valor of early Bush years actors.
Yeah, yeah. That brilliant. Know? Brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant, right? But it used to be that way. Like, artists used to be on the firing line. Like,
their
necks were out there.
Exactly.
And again, we would argue that if we think about what's the purpose of art, where did we even conjure this term? Like, we would very much like to say that once art became not the province of religion,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
When it wasn't just painting the Sistine Chapel to visualize the images in the Bible or whatever the fuck. When art, the origins of art trace all the way back to subversion towards unbrainwashing.
Right. Though I would argue that a lot of art was also related to sorrow. Like, you know, somebody dies or some, you know, love and, you know, it doesn't all have to be political. This isn't political, but, you know, about the world in which we live in. So there is celebratory and all that.
Very
but
true.
We are definitely talking specifically at the cultural art, the art that questions, the art that makes people stop and think. So, you know, take away the flower paintings, like those are beautiful and they have their place, but we are specifically talking about kind of the art that, the middle finger art, which is all kinds. It's just, you know, painting, sculpture, theater, whatever. But there is, you know, the allowance of the pretty bird or whatever.
So if you subscribe to the idea of all that words and sounds and images have power, and your next thought is, well, that power is a responsibility, and what should we do with that power? We would like to say that it's very clear that the purpose of art is to, if not to celebrate, if not to help in a mourning, is to speak truth to power.
Right. Yeah, and for sure.
Of course, we know the fourth estate is nowhere to be found.
Yep.
And none of us are going to be starting media empires anytime soon, including this fucking podcast. As you said, we suck at capitalism.
Yeah.
But in any case, the artist, if we reject capitalism, we think it's possible that we could go further.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I think we've made our case. You're hearing us saying that art is important. We're not wrapped around the axle about it. We're not up our own fucking ass about it.
And we're not experts.
We're not fucking experts.
But we have eyes.
And we paint a little, and we draw a little. And lately, I've come to say, we've been painting. You just heard us say, we're on a little hiatus because we've been planting.
And that's been a form of art for us, very much so.
And maybe it was just about food and butterflies and pollinators and, you know,
natural world,
rebuilding the ecosystem around us and just spending time outside. But what we've come to realize and appreciate is that, wait, there's something more to this, because it feels artistic to put your hands in the dirt.
Absolutely.
And then you look up and you look, well, this is like a 4D painting.
Right.
Because not only are we painting spatially with living beings, but we're painting over time.
Yep.
And things change over time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the visuals that we're providing with now, the pollinators and the new butterflies and the dragonflies
and the hummingbirds
and the food that we're eating, like, it does feel spiritual.
Yes.
It feels spiritual to people that come over here that really aren't into this stuff.
Right.
Again, we weren't into this stuff 6 months ago.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
We weren't into this stuff a year ago.
Right.
And so we think that we are feeling better because the closer we get to art, the closer we get to natural art, the art along with the bees, the better we're starting to feel.
And like we've said before, we are building a fuck you garden. It's the middle finger. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And unlike J.A. from the UK, like, we don't have art backgrounds.
No. Mm-mm.
Not at all.
Mm-mm. Zero.
And we are not advocating for storming the Met and taking it over. Although, if you want to do that, great.
Right.
We'd like to say that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, please consider that you have the opportunity to show us the path forward.
Right.
And to help visualize that second world.
Right.
Whatever your discipline is, and you don't have to be an artist.
No.
So this is about democratization of the art.
Yeah. Take your idea of art and throw it away, because it doesn't mean you have to know how to draw or paint or sculpt or fucking
play guitar
or podcast, whatever. But if you can see something different in the world, in society, in culture, in your fucking apartment, in your fucking work, in capitalism, whatever, all of that is creativity. Thinking outside of the box, walking up to somebody and thinking, this person's a douchebag, I'm not going to pretend I like him anymore, I'm going to walk around him and glare at him. That's a fucking piece of art right there. Let me tell you. You see my glare? It is art.
Oh, it's extremely artful. I mean, just beautiful.
Yeah.
If you're sitting in some fucking stupid meeting, could be with your family, could be with your boss. If you are the one that's saying, I don't know, maybe instead of putting 6 people on a plane to Las Vegas, we should think about the carbon footprint of that, and we should just do a webinar.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
that's artistic.
Yeah.
Anytime that you feel like you have the opportunity to talk about the way the world should be, we would encourage you to put it into words, put it into feeling, put it into visuals.
Yes. Yes.
And that doesn't mean that you have ever had to think of yourself as an artist.
Exactly.
So creativity is essentially the subtopic, the through line of today.
Yeah.
We're talking about, we need a bunch of creative motherfuckers. You hear us saying, we need this. This is Casey and I's hope.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Casey and I's thought. Comment on it.
Yeah.
Tell us
we're full of shit. We'll tell you, prove it.
Yeah, prove it. I don't know that I'm actually full of shit.
I would like to say that I was raised in a household where I wanted to be an artist, and I was told that no, artists are poor and fucking stupid. So
Right. And here we are sliding backwards into poverty.
But man, are we artistic.
Yeah. But our butterfly garden's on point. Ask us about the recent tax
bill. Yeah, but rich doesn't equal happy.
Fuck
and
no,
poor,
it doesn't.
Probably closer.
Yeah, closer to happy.
Depending on how poor. There's a line.
So that's our pitch for the need for art and the need for creativity. Now let's move into discussing the, quote, second world aesthetic that we teased earlier. Casey, what's the second world? What do we mean by the second world?
Well, I gave a little brief how we came to it. How I look at it, it's kind of bridging the third world to the first world. So with the changing ecosystem that we have done, we have forced change upon the climate, we can't continue in the world that we live in. We can't continue in a consumption-based world. It can't be capitalism, and we can't live in the way that we currently live in the West. But living in the third world is not acceptable either, because, you know, there is extreme poverty. There's people that are suffering. It's fucked up, right? So we need something in the middle where we see people living acceptable lives, healthy lives, with no excess,
Mm-hmm.
But people are happy and there's community. We're living smaller, both smaller in our consumption, obviously, but also smaller in our communities.
Mm-hmm.
We stop fucking breeding. We put on a moratorium on children. Fucking stop. And we bring us down. We manage our population and we live smaller, just period.
So the second world would have hospitals and all of the vaccines that you could eat. I think that's how you get vaccinated.
You have to eat eggs, I think.
Mm-hmm. However, you have to go there via horse and buggy. That's just how it works in the second world. It's a state-of-the-art hospital.
So
it's got lasers and robots.
Can I tell you, I will say this is how I revision healthcare. What I revision healthcare is there's healthcare team in each bioregion.
And they meet you at the farmer's market.
And basically, there's like a signed, you know, they come through your villa, you know, every Tuesday. And if you need something, and then there's obviously emergency on call. But for the most part, they come to your house.
Yeah.
Because then they see how you live. You know, because healthcare isn't about sitting in a waiting room and watching TV and then they talk to you for 5 minutes. You go in and see how somebody lives. You learn a lot about how their health is, you know.
And in a non-monetary economy,
yeah,
we could accommodate that.
Absolutely.
And we say that as having recently spent a lot of time at some state-of-the-art, thought to be hospitals in the world. We've been a bunch to the Mayo Clinic.
Yeah.
We've been all up and down the Mayo Clinic in many different departments.
And let me tell you, the person who has helped me and actually figured out my health problems was a PA. Just a PA, you know.
An Iraqi immigrant.
An Iraqi immigrant, yeah.
He's a great fucking PA.
He is the best doctor I think I've had in a very long time.
And like I said, having spent a bunch of time at Mayo, it was very easy to see that they're not practicing medicine just by walking into the motherfucking cafeteria and seeing
God.
What was
insane
on serve there.
Insane.
And so you think about this. You think about like all the billions of dollars treating sick people. But you can go get a chicken fried fucking steak down at the cafeteria 7 days a week.
Insane.
And you start to wonder, are they really practicing medicine here?
Yeah. No, they're not.
So that's medicine in the new bioregions in the second world. The second world aesthetic, I would say, also includes building on top of the old world.
Yeah.
And we've seen a lot of the dystopia. So artists, and we'll talk about science fiction here in a little bit, but our artists have shown us the crumbling world. Very few artists have shown, well, how can the crumbling world become the building blocks for the next world? Over the next 150 years, shit's gonna fucking crumble. And whomever is left, if there are people left, those will be their building blocks. The crumbling world, today's crumbling world, will be tomorrow's raw materials to build from. And so if we're to talk about the second world aesthetic, it would take into account the shit we see around us as rubble and then rising again as something new and better.
Right.
What else does the second world aesthetic consist of, Casey?
The natural world. Just more of it and less indoors. like, we're not talking just tiny homes. I mean, tiny homes can be a part of it, but that's a whole different thing, different topic that we'll get to probably at some point. But smaller spaces that we're heating and cooling.
Yeah.
So a lot of outside time. And that means if you live in a northern region, you're cold. If you're outside and you're living in a small space. But, you know, go snowshoe, go cross-country skiing, go do something outside. You can still spend time outside. You've chosen to live in the north. If you're only living in the north because of a job, then move fucking south. Like, you know, you need to be in the region that you're most comfortable, because you're going to spend a lot of time outside in the second world.
And the art of the second world, as you mentioned, won't be in giant atriumed air-conditioned galleries.
No, none.
The art should have the principles of functionality. Yeah. We'd like to argue in our second world artistic manifesto, a new movement, a new old movement.
Although some people would say, but what will we do with all the ancient art? We have to keep it at this perfect temperature and this perfect climate, or it will degrade.
And I think we'd say, we'd reject that. We'd say, look, this old art, some of it, if you want to keep in the last remaining bubble wrap that we pull out of a whale stomach, go fucking nuts. However, I'd like to take the Picassos and I'd say, I don't know, put them in the garden, see what the fuck happens.
Yeah.
Be like, there was this guy named Picasso, he did some fucking weird shit. I think he had like weird faces and some stuff. And then it's been rained on for the last 200 years and it looks different now.
Yeah, but, that's a...
Oh shit, getting a call from the weed delivery man.
Oh, I already set that up, motherfuckers. Thanks for calling.
From WHY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Fresh with Gross Air Weekend. Today, the daughter of an aristocrat, we talk with Elka Bellwether. Her new memoir, My Year Running Free with the Wolf Kittens, is about how she needed to find freedom from her family's riches and why it required her to take chances running with the infamous, dangerous, unpredictable Wolf Kittens. Support from this program comes from large corporate sponsor that has handpicked the guests. Before there were celebrities, there was Elka Bellwether's family, a long line of wealth traced back directly to Jesus himself. And that story has remained deep in Elka Bellwether's psyche. After growing up in British colonial India, she then went on to complete 2 PhDs, letters that prove she is intelligent, and you are listening to one of your betters. So tell me, Elka, why take such chances when you've got it all?
Well, darling, it's easy for you to say I've got it all, isn't it? But just because I've got planes, trains, and automobiles doesn't mean I've done all that I can. See, I worked hard because Father required this of me. I couldn't get 1 PhD. I had to acquire a second because that is the Bellwether way. And with that second doctorate, I, just like so many, felt there was more to the world than $1,000 guinea pigs, black market catnip, and red carpet scratching posts. I needed to connect to my origins, to the beast inside me.
The beast inside. I love how you describe that in your first chapter. You wrote, quote, I dined in every country, hunted the rarest species, and danced with the richest toms. But I felt something inside me akin to a roar. Something that if I didn't feed it, I knew it would swallow me whole. It could swallow the entire world. So I needed to confront the beast inside of me the only way I knew how. And that was to join the most dangerous animals on the planet. Alone, penniless, without anything except my copy editor, camera crew, and veterinarian. That must have been a troubling experience. You make it sound as though you've always felt different.
It's hard, you know. Everyone expects so much from the wealthy. We must always present ourselves as otherworldly. But domestic, of course. Father always said, dress like a princess, but act like a diplomat.
Mm.
So much nodding, so many smiles. Mm-hmm. I was never allowed to act out my deepest and darkest needs. So yes, I felt different because I wasn't ready to carry the burden of wealth on my shoulders. I needed to go back in time, visit my ancestors.
Back in time. You're speaking, of course, of Jesus. Do you feel any pressure now that the Catholic Church has contested your family's lineage?
Before my time with the Wolfkins, I would have been devastated. I would have needed at least a year to myself, away from cameras and microphones. But since I've fought for my meals, run from poachers, and even walked on water, I have found the strength to stand up to bullies like the Pope. And it seems the people are with me.
It's hard not to be impressed. Tell us more about that time. In your memoir, you take pains to explain how hard it was to be accepted by the Pack Pride. Yet, it seemed, especially from images, that the Wolf Kittens embraced you nearly immediately.
Oh, thank you, thank you. You know, my father has always said I have a way with animals. Though I do see it the other way. The animals do have a way with me. You see, I've always gotten what I've wanted. Before my time with the Wolf Kittens, I thought my outwardly dominance was due to my family's wealth. But now I know all that I have and all that I will ever be is because of what is inside of me. What has been inside me all along. An animal. We cats are quick to talk down about the other species. Their slow wit, their dull senses, their filthy habits. But once we shed our wealth, we quickly realize we're all just animals running around looking for a place to sleep, a place to shit, a place to fuck, and of course a meal. The Wolf Kittens taught me I didn't need a chaperone. I didn't need a chef. I didn't need another castle or another yacht. What I needed was a fair fight, fair pay, equality, and I had to kill for it myself. And so I did.
And clearly you've won that fight, Ilka. But now I need to ask you some tough questions. What do you make of the environmentalists claiming your lifestyle alone could be what kills the last of the Wolf Kittens?
Oh, darling, when you're rich, you have to deal with the consequences. It isn't easy. Everyone wants a handout. You know, when I was giving six-figure yearly donations, I didn't hear them griping about my lifestyle. But after I ran with the Wolf Kittens, I realized my money was being wasted by these so-called environmental organizations. They weren't saving the Wolf Kittens. They didn't even know what it was like for them. But my year running free with them gave me a different, a more intimate understanding of their needs, their wants. That's why I created the Lifetime Security Alliance for Wolf Kittens.
The same organization that was implicated, though not named, in your recent arrest for running a Wolf Kitten mill in Missouri?
Oh, darling, I never stepped foot in that state. What would I possibly want with Missouri? My arrest was nothing more than a misunderstanding. My name has been cleared, as has the name of my charitable organization. These are the things that so many of the naysayers don't understand. It's hard being a household name. It's hard being the daughter of an aristocrat. It's even harder being the descendant of the Messiah. But the Wolf Kittens have given me the strength to overcome all those weaknesses. The woman who sits in front of you today, Terry Fresh, is a woman who has all but become a Wolf Kitten. I am the safest beast you'll ever encounter, which is why I don't even have to address your concerns about my abuse of the natural world. It's my family's company who owns the corporation that sponsors your show. Checkmate, Terry Fresh, and the American Centrist. Keep buying my book. I'll be sure to kill something innocent and rare with each purchase.
You heard it from the beast mouth. Thank you so much, Ilka Bellwether. It's been an honor to have you on here, and we can't wait for your next book or movie or consumer product. Perhaps you'll choose to become president of our country someday. Democracy is crying for your help. Thank you so much for being here.
It's your pleasure, I'm sure.
All right, so we've discussed the need for art and the problems with what's happening with art right now, and even have reframed art to be anyone doing anything related to creative climate change adaptation. You're now an artist.
Yep.
You'll be getting your business cards in the mail.
And your degree.
We've quickly discussed the second world aesthetic, and now we'd like to talk about examples of the second world aesthetic by discipline.
Ooh.
Similar to how we revisualized what Instagram could become. I don't remember what episode that was. I think it was about culture.
Yeah, that was our
when we culture. Said, you know what? We've got all the celebrities on Instagram. They too can show us how to live in the second world. And we had some ideas for the kinds of shit they should be posting on the timeline. So if you're out there as a painter, if you are doing music, if you're a stand-up comedian, we're going to run through these disciplines and give you a couple ideas for how you can creatively show what the second world could become.
That's right. Drum roll, please.
As J.A. said, Banksy should have stayed on the streets. So, KC, if you're a street artist, how can the street artist be deployed in the Maximum Carbon Sinkhole Second World Administration? How can we subsidize the street artists in the Maximum New Deal? How can we create a works program for the street artists? What do you think the street artists could do? How could we get them out of doing Nike's corporate branding?
Oh, my God. I know. It's terrible. Well, I mean, I almost don't want them to beautify old things.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes people, like, not have to deal with the blight.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. So instead of spray cans, they're going to trade in their paint for hoes and shovels and maybe some pickaxes.
Yeah,
you know what?
You're yeah.
just plant in the middle of the road. That's
and,
what you're
doing.
And
that's
now.
The thing is
fill
is
that pothole
in
with that sycamore.
In the second world, we're not going to have aerosol spray paint. It's just, we've done that. It was cool. Don't get me wrong. Huffing is a thing. I get it. But that's not something that fits in the second world. We don't have a good way to really make that without ruining the planet. It's chemicals and it's not. That's just not something
so
we can do.
If you're going to be an out of work, out of chemicals, graffiti artists, we're saying start painting with plants, man.
Yeah.
Just
and
like
if
we're
you're
doing.
Like, well, I don't want to live in this world, that world, then you won't.
Then you,
won't make it.
But if you're going to be looking at all this rubble thinking, what can I do? Hey, man, grab some kudzu vines and start making some framework lattice of whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
You can paint in 3D and 4D over time.
It's fucking cool.
So in the second world, graffiti artists are going to be painting with plants.
Yes.
What about this? This is probably my favorite one. What about stand-up?
Comedy?
Stand-up comedy. There's this current perception that stand-ups and comedians, that these are the truth tellers of our age, which we think is patently fucking bullshit. Comedy has been sucked up by politics.
Yeah,
too.
It's totally political. You know, you can't, and even worse, does remember we watched Ricky Gervais?
Yeah.
And his stand-up consisted of him retelling his tweeting history.
Yeah, that was fucking
And
horrible.
I was like, are you fucking really serious
so we're like,
right now?
This is the vegan pro-animal rights
He's
guy.
Vegetarian. He's vegetarian. He's vegetarian.
All right. But anyway, and he was like, yeah, J.A., why don't you go straighten Gervais out, okay? You're over there across
no
the pond.
Oh, shit. You got to know him. You live probably right around the corner.
It's not that big. There's like 40 people that live in greater UK-isms. But yeah, that was really disappointing. You're right. His latest special was just all like, I own somebody on Twitter.
I know. And can you imagine awesome. If you were somebody who actually participated in that own and you're like, wait, I was there. It wasn't that. But they probably were like, ooh, I was there. I tweeted and somebody liked my tweet.
I remember that one. I remember that one. I retweeted that one for him. I was one of the 108 people that retweeted that one.
I was
there.
Yeah. So there's that extreme. And then the other is either the current administration is terrible or the other side is the past administration was terrible. And then it's just jokes about the people that like each of the politicians and then each of the politicians and how they're retarded they are. And it's like, we already know all this information and I don't fucking care.
And you've said this before, but what pisses us off about political commentary to date, so let's just say fucking Bill Maher, right?
Okay.
One of the truth tellers of it. Fuck the fuck off. What you're talking about is that all of today's political commentary presupposes that a better leader, a better man, would just get us out of this
exactly.
mess.
Exactly. If we only elected the right person.
And the people that voted for this person are the real idiots, so let's make fun of fucking them.
And it goes to Samantha Bee is like, at first I was like, oh, cool, a woman on TV who's going to say fuck, and you know, women don't usually get to have this role. And it's all the same stuff. It's like, yeah, we know. That thing is terrible.
But the major narrative about stand-ups today is that they're all part of the resistance. You got all the late-night shows that are just speaking truth to power.
Yeah. No, but the basic thing with stand-up comedians is they're just pushing the same narrative, is that there's heroes and there's villains. And we laugh at the villains because they're so stupid. And we wonder why nobody gets the heroes. And when are we going to get a hero? And don't we just deserve a hero?
And the dominant narrative, but the dominant narrative of stand-up is, well, at least we have these late-night hosts, including Samantha Bee.
Exactly.
Who are out there, John Oliver, and then that guy that just had the Netflix show, the really excitable metrosexual guy with the big eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I've watched a couple of these, and like, he's good at this, but what this is just like you said, it's just like, we need a better hero.
Yeah.
And it's not talking, it's not...
It's there's, not there's revisioning. And who's that guy we watched recently? Bill Hicks.
Yeah, we caught up on Bill Hicks' old catalog.
Yeah, yeah. He reimagined a different world. Yeah. So he was an artist. He was a fucking artist.
He was speaking truth to power. He didn't look at the current system and say, you know, the problem is who's in charge.
Right. George Carlin. And there might be other comedians today that we just don't know of because why? The machine doesn't want us to know.
They haven't been picked by
him. Exactly.
Hey, if you're a comedian that you feel like the machine is taking a big old shit on your career aspirations, come on Maximum Carbon Sinkle and be heard by 50s of people. All right. Breaking new ground here.
There's a couple hundreds.
Hundreds of people. See?
I mean, like 107.
You know what? We have more people listening to us babble today than when we first started.
That's true.
Before we had podcasted, it was just the cats.
Yeah.
And now it's the dozens or hundreds of you. Thank you.
And all your cats.
And your voice could be on this crazy shit show if you email us at carbonsinkle@protonmail.com. Stand-up comedy or not.
Yeah.
You heard us go along there with stand-up comedy. I would still argue that Bill Burr is a climate change comedian in disguise. Right? Right?
No, I think it's weird how like human beings are trying to control the population of animals, you know? Like anytime the deer population gets out of control, some dude would literally get on TV and be like, all right, the deer population is up to about 1,800. Realistically, we need to get that number down about 5-6 of them, all right? So start them off, you got a gun, fucking shoot one in the face. I'm just sitting at home like, what are the deer doing that's so bad for the environment, you know? They're going to eat all the fucking grass. They're coming up to trees, just nibbling. Just nibbling. Dude, the deer didn't put a hole in the ozone layer, all right? That's not a bunch of dogs clogging up the freeways. It's us, right?
Film. What should anyone... We don't know how film's going to work when there's no electricity or camera batteries in the future.
It doesn't work now anyways.
But if you imagine some way to take the batteries of your and do some visual images, I don't know. We don't know how you're going to do film. You might have to lash a bunch of sticks together and paint them with your own blood and string them up, from big vines and then sort of drop them in sequence like a flipbook of your. We don't know how you're going to do it.
No, I think it's shadow puppets.
Shadow puppets. So
Game of Thrones, shadow puppets.
So what should the filmmakers of the future working in shadow puppets, where should they be training their quasi-camera?
Not on superheroes.
Yeah. And that's a given, right? Like, we're not going to be like, oh, superheroes, death of film or whatever. That's a commercial. It's a commercial enterprise now.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Here's an easy vector for you. If you're like, I want to get started today. You take your rom-com script, meet the parents, Hawaiian Christmas Vacation, right?
Right.
Okay.
I think that one's been done already.
Meet the Parents
part
5.
Two.
Hawaiian Christmas Vacation. What you do there is you say, okay, first of all, just like our last episode, just like we've been preaching, you're going to break up with Christmas. All right. So you're going to take Christmas out of your script and the rom-com, the quirky rom-com family and their extended family, they're going to break. It's going to take place over the quote unquote holidays, but no Christmas. And it's not weird.
Right.
That's you visualizing the next world.
If anything, it's maybe, oh my God, somebody chopped down a tree and
that's weird.
We're going to have to go talk to them.
Yeah. We should burn down their house.
I think that's illegal.
And also we're not flying on planes to go see these people over the holidays. Mm-mm. And if we're in a house, it's going to be small.
Yeah.
And have some natural
cozy,
grime.
Cozy.
It's going to be cozy.
Yeah.
It's going to be...
Yeah, your idea of cleanliness is going to change.
Trust us. We are just blazing a trail here.
We are definitely in the second world.
For sure. Totally in the second world. All of that pet hair, that's insulation.
It is. It is.
All right, so that's... film and some ideas for
can I say though, film does it can still be entertaining
for sure.
Like, that's the thing is that you don't it
this doesn't the subject, have to be dour.
No, and the subject matter doesn't, and it doesn't always have to be like, you know, that has a message at the end, like, but it really, it needs to be embedded in there. It that's the point, you know. Expression for expression's sake is a meme, you know. I mean,
and hey, if you're listening from Hollywood right now and you got some big science fiction blockbuster superhero thing, we're saying find some chances to be subversive, you know. Shrink the house, have somebody making tools out of not electricity.
Yeah.
Well, have them sharing an all plant meal.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff.
There you go. There you go.
Show a woman not wearing makeup,
growing their own food. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not wearing makeup. Not
you can slide these in right now. If you need some ideas, you're in the editing room. You're doing special effects.
Give us a call,
James Cameron. You're on set right now. Hey, you're already doing the vegan thing. Just put that in your movies more.
He's super eco-conscious. Even his 40,000 square foot home. And I think that's his third one.
Yeah, that's super eco-conscious. And I'm sure craft services is all sort of locavore stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm
but we're saying. Jimmy Cameron, you know, how about some more vegans? Where's the vegan representation at the Oscars?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I want to know.
Yeah, dicks.
All right, so moving on to other disciplines and how they can start to reflect the second world. Literature, KC. A little bit of a source subject of literature.
Yeah, so can we stop writing about people in New York City who have quirky relationships and are sitting at a really nice restaurant talking about it.
And may or may not have extended family and or friends or protagonists who are somehow in the art or literary world.
Yes, please. Stop. Just stop.
See, it's a writer and she's married to a book publisher and it's just hilarious.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When they go visit their in-laws over Christmas.
Really, but the language she uses is brilliant.
Her characterization
is
hilarious.
And she went to Columbia.
Yeah, and she uses her professor, obviously left a good mark on her life. Literature, what the fuck's wrong with literature?
So literature has gone so wrong. And I would say it went wrong. It's similar to film because there was a time where science fiction was a commentary on today. That disappeared, I don't know, probably... I don't know because I wasn't a big science fiction consumer.
So we don't have the timeline, maybe.
So I don't maybe have the timeline. But I do know that science fiction went from saying, hey, the world's fucked up. This is how I'm seeing, showing you how the world's fucked up. It's in this futuristic or different planetary, whatever. Into, ooh, look at us. We're going to Mars and we're recolonizing Mars. And ooh, look at our flying cars and we're all electric. And ooh, look at the mega super cities with 6,500 million trillion people. We're all concentrated there and it's dirty and it's dark. But, you know, prostitution is still a thing. You know, like there's always prostitution. I mean,
finally
always
back again.
Yeah. You know, and that's it. And what it's not doing is it's not reimagining anything close to what is going to happen, which isn't going to be good. Mm-hmm. And then what could happen, which could be great, but different, very, very different, you know? And if anything, if you're going to have this alternative future, like us recolonizing Mars, the moon, or, you know, intergalactic travel, like
recolonizing,
it has,
like
you
we've
have,
been there before.
Yeah. But you have to start with a different history because from the way we have come to where we are today, we're not fucking recolonizing Mars. I don't care what the fuck you think. It's not going to happen. We can't even keep this planet okay. We're not going to make a different planet habitable. Mm-hmm. Like it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I love that point that you've made right there. It bears zeroing in on, which is we're seeing a lot of science fiction where, you know, maybe a lot of original science fiction writing, right? And we're still making movies and TV and stuff from some of that original science fiction writing. But it had a lot to do with commenting on the world we live in today, right? That's
right,
the good kind
right,
of science fiction.
Right,
we're
right.
definitely science fiction dorks.
Totally, totally.
Now you're seeing a lot of spectacle to be expected because spaceships are cool
right
and rockets and all that shit is right. cool but man I fucking love that point Casey you said that if we're going to go down the space path with our art with our literature we need to show it as an alternate history not as an extension
Correct.
Of what we're doing because we've talked about Blade Runner 2047 a
yeah.
couple times but this is fucking great right I love that point the idea that somehow we're going to have major degradation of soil
right
and
plant life
and plant life like we're gonna ruin the planet and yet somehow we're gonna have flying cars
yeah
as if that's gonna lead we're gonna be able to build 100 foot seawalls
right
around all of our mega cities
yeah
and but the outside of the megacities is going to be uninhabitable.
Yeah.
And this is maybe like a bigger idea than sort of I think anyone's talking about it. The idea that we can still have these scientific and industrial breakthroughs,
yeah,
even if the natural world itself breaks down.
Right.
And I fucking love that point.
Yeah.
And when you had said that the other day, it really brought home one of the books that she's been working on,
yep,
Sinkhole fans out there, which is reimagining what space travel would look like and how you could actually connect it to an ecologically minded society.
Correct.
Because there's this big thought that scientific breakthroughs and especially space travel might be at odds with an ecological mindset.
Right.
But maybe that doesn't have to be the case.
Right. If we come from a different place, mm-hmm, and we have a different civilization and we turned a different direction at some point, then that's a different future.
But right now when we talk about space travel, it's all because, well, we fucked up this planet, so we're going to need somewhere else to live.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's the wrong way to do it.
Exactly.
The right way to do space travel would be, you know what? What is our species good at? Where do we fit in the world?
Exactly. And what's our niche?
What are we uniquely capable of?
Right.
And how do we contribute our proliferation in some way to the great strange cosmos?
Right.
And to the great thing that is life that we barely have a grasp of.
Exactly.
Right. So that's a good way to explore, yeah, space travel.
Yeah. But where I think literature has failed the most is with climate change. And that's specifically with cli-fi. Something that I thought, cli-fi, I never even heard of it. This was 2 years ago, probably. And so I went to the Wikipedia because there wasn't much information on it. And I got the books of the top cli-fi. And the books were terrible. They were terrible. Kim Stanley Robinson, and fuck you if you say, oh, he's brilliant. 40 Signs of Rain.
I think like a lot of people credit him as being like the architect of cli-fi.
Yeah, and I just... The writing is terrible and it's formulaic and it's not art. It's commercial property. Yeah. So all it is it's just like what the comedians are doing. It's saying, you know, look, climate change is bad. And you know, in the case of some of his novels, I think it's all science is going to try to figure out an answer.
The scientists are on this
and the drama and the political,
yeah,
landscape, which is tumultuous. And
it's like Independence Day. We're like, put Jeff Goldblum in a lab coat. He'll figure it out.
Yeah. 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 And it's just like, I don't know.
So
it's not, it's not commenting on the machine. It's not commenting on even like what, any changes, any new world, anything. It's just more of the drama,
the spectacle of it.
Yeah.
All the crazy shit happening.
Yeah.
And a lot of cli-fi, if it involves anything related to the fall or the collapse, it's portrayed as a singular event rather than what we see unfolding right now, which is a lot of individual events that are adding up to,
right,
a world very different from the one that, right, we were told to expect.
Well, and one other book that I'll bring up, which I did not enjoy, was called Gold, Fame, Citrus by Claire V. Watkins, who her book of short stories I really enjoyed. She is a Western writer, meaning she mostly talks about the desert.
The American West.
I'm not interested in the desert. I never will be. I don't want to live there. You can't really survive there, in my opinion. Not on the land anyways.
We are growing some cactus here.
We are. But cactus grows. It's natural. It's native in Florida. So, yeah. She definitely took an artistic spin, and I think she did have some commentary on it. It just was a little more drama than I'm really interested, like personal drama that I just, and the weird part of it, I don't know. It was just, it just didn't work for me, but that's not to say it wasn't good for some people. Maybe if I was really into the American West, I would have liked it.
So what does need to happen with literature in the second world?
Well, it's the same thing as film, you know. It needs to put a spotlight on the bad and reimagine the good. What can we do? What is the change? What is this new thing that we need to be doing? What is a different way to look at a problem? What is a different way to look at a solution? What is a different way to look at these kind of people or those kind of people? And let's learn more about this. Is it, you know, it's all about kind of opening eyes and giving people new perspective.
Yeah. So I'm very eager to read some cli-fi romance novels. right?
This gold fame citrus might suit you.
Oh, really?
There's a I spit on that.
There's a little
bit of a love story. Yeah, there's a little bit of that in there.
So maybe they're necking in the back seat. I think there's a lot of necking in romance novels.
I think there's a lot of necking.
Yeah, a lot of necking. Yeah. They're necking in the husk of a rotting Tesla Model X, because you want the room, and they got the gullwing doors up, but it's been sitting in the desert for 100 years.
Yeah.
But it just happens. This is how we use the building, the crumbles of the old world in the new story.
Right. And just, you know, absurdity is also fun, you know, and just the idea that it isn't the job of scientists. It isn't the job of somebody else at all to fix the problems of today. Mm-hmm. It's everybody's job.
And this was our biggest beef with the Green New Deal, because there's a bunch of fucking liberals.
Yeah.
And again, sorry we have to comment on politics and use that existing current language, but there's a lot of people that would consider themselves environmentally conscious that are thinking, like, my life, but with a law passed, equals sustainability.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what we keep wondering is, who's going to do it for us?
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought, individual actions can't add up to a better world. Well, who's going to do it for us?
Well, and why are they saying that? Because they don't want you to stop buying.
That's right. Even people who are like, well, listen, you can replace your light bulbs and recycle your water bottles, but individual actions, and you can cut meat out of your diet, but it's really not going to save shit, so it's futile. Well, if we don't do it, who is?
Yeah, and you lead by example. It's fucking contagious, man.
And if you're writing some literature, we would argue that your characters in the second world aesthetic need to be doing it them fucking selves.
And subtle is good too. I love when it's subtle, like it's a subtle fuck you. Because you know what? Not everybody's going to get it, but you need to be able to, the literature needs to be accessible. And that's probably something else about Gold Fame Citrus. I don't think it's super accessible. And it does need that to a certain extent, right? Because the average person doesn't want to work that hard when they read, and that's okay.
So we've taken you now through a couple different examples by discipline of how artists can start to reimagine the second world.
Right.
I want to end this section here with a discussion of tone.
Ooh, tone. Right? Okay. Well,
so
okay.
If we get into the theory here,
right.
And I'll just sort of lay this out. Again, you're thinking about the building blocks. You got some ideas on how art in the second world should work. A, we want your submissions, even if they're visual.
Right.
Oh, now I've said too much. No. We hope to start collecting a lot of examples of second world art. Do you have ideas for what this would be?
Yeah.
Write us, carbonsinkle@protonmail.com.
Yeah.
Well, in this discussion of what art would be to visualize the second world, we think that there's a handful of principles in the second world artistic movement, and maybe they go something like this. The art should be intertwined with nature, not merely a comment on it.
Yes.
Are you
yes.
painting with plants? Are you doing things with plants? Is the natural world part of the art? It's not just the background.
Right. And I know there's a woman, I think she's in New Mexico. I don't know her name offhand, but she is trying to catalog all of the colors in the natural world so that she can paint purely from nature. And I think that's really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
I like that. So how can you turn your plants or the plants that you would like to spring into action? How can you turn plants into art around your apartment or your house?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. How can you trade some of your tools, graffiti artists, for some piece of the natural world?
Yep.
Can you use bees? Can you
bees?
Right.
Tell me.
Is there a way to put beehives around your city and to allow people to foist their eyes upon them in a new way and say the bees aren't just little honey factories for us.
Right.
These too are beautiful.
Right.
Going further, I think we would argue that the second world tone would reconceptualize the deindustrialized first world. Right? How can we look at how can we look at the products and the artifact of the first world, and how can we start to give them a different definition? It's the idea that,
and a different purpose.
So, like one way is like, okay, you're making sculptures out of old shoes that you found at the landfill. That's great.
Yeah.
But what else? What other pieces of the industrial world can be reconceptualized, reimagined? We need creative people to do that. Art in the second world, it's not so new and fucking shiny.
Right.
As you just mentioned there, if we're painting only with natural colors.
They're not going to be.
Yeah.
You know, super, super crazy, fluorescent, bright, whatever.
Yeah. You're not going to have fluorescent orange. Right. You might have orange.
Right.
Right. But you're not going to have like that sign painter orange.
Yeah. You're not going to have 27 different oranges to choose from.
And for that, you're going to have the dye that you can get out of plants.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah.
I would argue, and maybe you've gathered this from Casey and I, that art in the second world is inherently vulgar.
Fuck off.
And here's why. I think it relates to the second point. The art, although you said it can be subtle, I don't think art in the second world can be so abstract.
No, I agree with you. And you're right. You're right.
Okay.
I think you're right. And I think I was a little wrong with the subtlety thing. And only because the only reason, excuse us, we have an itch.
Thanks, Elka.
Yeah. The only reason I mentioned the subtlety is I do think that some people, they get bogged down when things are too complicated and too layered. So by subtlety, I guess I meant more simple, not hard to not, you don't have to like sit there and think on a page and try to extrapolate exactly what's going on. That's what I mean. Yes, it needs to be in your face. And I think tonally also, I would like to say the vulgarity, there needs to be a distinct difference. So old world, meaning first and third world, needs to have some anger, some angst, you know, some guilt and all that. Whereas the vulgarity in the second world is much more celebratory and also of fuck the first and third world, right? This world is great and we're going to work our hardest to keep it that way and not go down the same fucking hole we've clearly gone down before, which is suicide.
It is.
I mean, we end up fucking ourselves, you know, in a bad way.
It's obvious that the death drive of the current civilization, of dominant culture, is its main feature.
Yeah, yeah.
So vulgarity, it's a celebration. So every time you say a fuck, do it with a smile.
Yeah.
Fucking A.
Fucking A. Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. That's some fucking bullshit.
That's fucking bullshit. So I will say this tonally. I have always liked dark. Always. But I think in the second world, there always has to be a little bit of light, but not in the good ending kind of way, you know?
Not in the happy ending.
Not in the happy ending. Fuck a happy ending. Even, there's never a fucking happy ending. Come on. But that nature is always the light.
And nature is going to be here.
And we are nature. We are nature.
We're part of nature.
And so that's where the only time there's darkness in the natural world is because of us.
And when it gets too dark still, as long as there's one tree standing, go sit by the fucking tree.
Exactly, because that's where the light is.
That's where the light is. And I think finally, the last tonal piece that we will put out here in our meandering manifesto of what second world art.
And I'd love to hear real artists, their opinion of what we have to say.
You can clearly hear that we don't have the art philosophy or the history or the training background.
No.
But we think that there is a major, major, major need for creative people to start to visualize the second world.
Exactly.
So again, these are our tenets, wrapping them up. Climate change is all of us.
Yes.
And we would like artists, wherever you're making art, if you are putting yourself into the art and it's obvious to the viewer or the reader that you are there, we would like to argue that there's art in the second world cannot have a view from nowhere.
Right.
As
yeah.
is commonly levied against
there has to be an
the
opinion.
News media of the state. Yeah. There has to be an opinion and it has to say, I'm complicit
critical,
in this too.
A critical opinion. I mean, you
a
have
critical
to
opinion.
Back it up, even if it's just, it's my fucking opinion.
And
fuck you.
And so, for example, the sarcasm and the irony and the puns that J.A. from the UK has helped us pop with Banksy as in the example there of the burned Vietnamese girl, you know, holding Ronald McDonald's hand.
Yeah.
What's left out of that kind of statement and why it ends up being a shallow statement is the complicity of Banksy himself.
Like, exactly.
And, you know, we live in this world too. We can't escape it. Jordan and Karen, we had that conversation with them in the last episode. but
there's no perfection. We have to do the best we can.
Yeah. And the sort of ironic detachment needs to go away in the second world.
Yes.
The idea that like what they're doing over there in that civilization, well, you're part of it too.
Exactly.
So there's no way to remove ourselves from it. And so we don't agree with the ability for us to comment on something and say, well, we are totally separate.
Right.
Of that.
And I think a really good point there, and kind of maybe what you were trying to say, or at least what I heard, is accountability. Like in the current world, we are supposed to allow law and order to decide on what is acceptable. But in the second world, if somebody's lighting their backyard on fire because they want to burn shit, we're all going to go and stand there and throw rocks at them.
Yeah. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Like, we can't just say, well, we're going to call the authorities. No, we're a community and we're all going to address this together. And we're all going to either make this motherfucker stop burning down trees or we have to kill him. I mean, that's it. Like, this is the new world. And I'm not advocating killing neighbors unless they're burning trees.
And it will be an artistic slaying of the tree burners.
And think of the cool art you could do with his bones.
Amazing, right?
Seriously.
See, what do you do with the ashes of the first world? These are our building blocks in the second world.
Yep.
Let's take a break. And now for a tragic story out of one of our nation's most vulnerable cities, Miami. Already racked by grief and grievances due to the ever-encroaching sea, no less than 10 luxury oceanfront high-rises now have to face their biggest challenge yet. In Miami, Mitch Cumstein.
On Dade Boulevard through the heart of Miami Beach, everyone is talking about the blue stripe.
Kids these days are disrespectful hooligans, anti-American.
My nail salon is closed until they erase that stupid line.
Vandals, under the cloak of darkness, left 10 square miles of the city poorer for their stunt.
Trillions of dollars of property damage, once-in-a-lifetime amount of destruction, and we can't let them win. We have to rebuild.
That was Miami's mayor, vaguely Cubano, speaking to NPR for the first time on this matter. Since last week's incident, he's been organizing state and federal forces to catch the perpetrator or perpetrators. Police Captain Vic Whitearm.
At 11:30 p.m. last Sunday evening, security cameras caught several individuals walking around the city on foot like losers, rolling out a thick blue line, sort of an aquamarine, a bluish-greenish ocean-colored paint all over the city. We do not have any suspects at this time. Homeland Security told us to assume that everyone under 50 is a suspect. This is a capital offense. These people weren't just looking to defile good, hardworking citizens' property. They clearly wanted to defile our freedom, our way of life. So we're going house to house with the mayor's office, with public safety, with FEMA, attempting to assess the amount of property damage caused to public and private property by this painting of a wide blue line about waist high all across people's cars, their front doors, and through utility easements. This is the worst incident of vandalism I've seen since my time on the force. And don't be fooled. This isn't art. This isn't some example of self-expression. This was a crime against our way of life. We're considering gang ties that we haven't yet found a signature, and we are bringing in supplies from the outside because we're expecting the damage to be in the trillions.
But what about the social cost?
It's hard for a community to accept this type of violence against the homes and businesses, but it's also an assault on this country's way of life. We've got a hotline for people across the country who are struggling to get through the day now that they've seen the line. Everyone is scared. Scared of the line, scared of the callous criminals that put it there.
That's Harvard professor Henry Crude Derrick III, an expert on social interruptions in Western meritocracies.
We look at what causes these individuals, and I think we're looking at a radical group of some sort. unemployed or underemployed, lacking any higher education, which is likely why they didn't use words, illiterate, and jealous of the residents who've worked hard to have the ability to live in generous oceanfront condos such as these.
That motherfucker flood all the time, excuse my language.
That's Calvin Murphy, a neighborhood bicyclist.
A lot of these buildings already flood. Sea level rise, yo. The tide's been creeping up a little every day, that blue line. That's a high water mark. I recognize that as soon as I fall. Figured the city out here wanted people out to get out soon before they underwater.
Absolutely not. Public Works has never assessed exactly how high the water gets on the unusual, and let me emphasize, rare high tides. The mayor's office firmly rejects the idea that Blue Line was any way an attempt to convey information or any artistic statement at all. We're talking about the criminal act done by sick people who do not want to be part of the community, and sure, we can rebuild, but it's the residents' hearts. Their faith has truly been broken here. Who's going to rebuild that?
The mayor's sentiment is shared broadly throughout the community.
I'm going back to the Outer Banks, safe from activist criminal types.
The neighborhood will never be the same. We all feel vulnerable, as if every nice thing we have is at risk.
We now have to live in constant fear. Thank God for our yacht. We've been sleeping there until we can erase that stupid line. Not just from our property, but from our psyche.
Would apprehending the guilty parties make it easier to go on from here?
I'm sure it would help to see those monsters punished. But they took something from me. From all of us. They took our innocence. Now every time I walk into our condo's lobby, all I see is that line, and it makes it hard to breathe. I couldn't get on a plane for 6 months after 9/11, but I don't know if I can ever live below the sixth floor without fear of... I can't...
Having witnessed the destruction firsthand, all I can say is the blue line is a direct threat to the hope that keeps America running. Ironically, every home improvement store in coastal cities across the country were out of blue paint the day after the blue line incident. So it seems, unfortunately, this abhorrent crime against oceanfront residents is bound to spread. NPR News, Mitch Kumpstein, Miami.
New old feature here. KC, what's the plan of the week?
I guess it's maybe the plan of the month this time around.
Which makes sense because it has been the...
Year of the Azalea.
Mm-hmm.
The Azalea. We've been here how many winters now?
Three.
So the first winter, I was like, oh, look, there's a few pink flowers. That's really cool. And then last year, there was none because we had a crazy...
And here is Central Florida for new listeners.
Yes, Central Florida. And this year, every square inch of this giant, giant bush was covered in magenta flowers for about a month.
Yeah. And all around the larger area, all around our extended dooryard on our walks, there's azaleas everywhere.
It's been everywhere.
The year of the azalea.
And the bumblebees fucking love them, and it's hilarious.
And maybe you know what azaleas are because grandma or somebody knows what azaleas are.
Like, right,
People are into azaleas.
So azaleas are part of the rhododendron family, which I heard of rhododendrons when I was a kid, but I never knew.
Yeah,
really
it's a dinosaur.
Yeah, they're real small. So they're invasive in Ireland and the UK.
Oh, okay.
That's weird, but I guess they're not invasive here. That's what Wikipedia said anyways. And isn't Ireland part of the UK? Because it said Ireland and the UK. Anyways.
Ireland is not part of the UK. Northern Ireland is part of it. J.A. explained all of this to us, of course.
That's right. I was stoned. I don't remember. The azaleas around us are evergreen, and they tolerate 8A to 9B in their growing zones. They love the shade, but flower better with some sun. So the ones we have get afternoon sun, but they don't get any morning sun, really. But even the side that didn't get a lot of sun at all. Well, so most people prune azaleas, and if you do prune them, you have to prune them right after they're done flowering because they set their next year flower buds right then and there. So after their flower buds die, within a month, they've got the flower buds that will come out the following year. So if you prune them like in fall, you've cut off probably the majority of their flower buds, which is kind of an interesting thing. But if left to do their own thing, which is what ours are, it's a huge hedge. It's a little bit of an airy bush. So it's not a super dense foliage bush, but it's, I mean, honestly, it's not much to look at.
And you see people try to shape them, which we would argue against.
Yeah, like little round balls. And
don't do that to your azaleas.
Don't do that.
Azaleas are a really excellent growing plant that looks like a hedge most months out of the year.
Yeah. And
except
then,
for one or two months where they are fucking popping.
Popping. I mean, it was like one of those things. Like
it's dreamy.
It was dreamy. It really was. We got some really good pictures of animals.
What kind of colors do they come in?
So they come in all of the colors.
Blue, purple.
The purple, yes.
Green flowers. You don't see many green flowers.
There are some, though. There
I'd like
are
to see
some.
A green flower.
I think our corky screw passion vine has a green flower.
I am intrigued.
I know. I haven't seen it flower yet, so I can't say for sure. But so the bees love these. Oh, azaleas also like acidic soil, which we have plenty of. Our soil is so on acid, you have no idea. But they're a good hedge and they're a good neighbor hider.
Very good neighbor hider.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you can actually grow them inside, but they need chilling hours.
To flower?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
They're like a nut tree.
Yeah.
Like a peach tree.
And people bonsai them too, which I don't know how I feel about bonsai. Like, okay. I used to really think bonsai was cool, but now I'm like, I don't know if the plant likes bonsai.
Right. So that's the azalea.
That's the azalea.
Yeah. So we have dubbed this year the year of the azaleas.
Yeah. Because it was insane.
Because we...
Everywhere. Because you don't know it, because you don't notice them as just regular bushes. So then all of a sudden they're covered in flowers from pinks and purples and magentas. And
great dooryard walk in this February and March. Just azaleas. Everywhere. Beautiful color.
Yes. All right.
So that's the plan of the week. KC, do we have any listener feedback?
We do. Feedback loops. We got a bunch.
As we mentioned earlier, yeah. Thank you for writing in carbonsinkle@protonmail.com.
That's right. All right. Number one, KC and JP. Thanks for making me laugh. It isn't easy these days. Wonder if you could do a show about what animals you think might survive us. Also, more commercials. DNR. I appreciated that. What animals might survive us? Sadly, I can't think of many besides the cockroach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one that we've always, you know, the cockroach was supposed to survive the nuclear blast.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with the coyote.
Oh, you know, and the raccoon.
Mm-hmm. I think the coyote, out of all the canids, I think the coyote has the best chance at getting, because they're like most... Dogs will eat fucking garbage and shit, but I think the coyotes, they have that little bit of edge to them.
They can eat plastic.
Yeah, I guess.
I've seen them. So.
Okay, well, they can eat your trash.
And they can live with mange for years.
And they're fine. And they've got that edge to them where they're just like, they'll go at your throat if they need to.
They will. And they're like, they are really brave.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, sometimes that's gotten them in trouble.
I just think the coyotes are scrappy enough, whether it's like the wolves have already been annihilated.
Coyotes and crows. Crows, too. They're super crafty.
Yeah. Coyotes and crows, I think, is going to be our answer. But that's a great idea for
a
show.
Yeah. It would be fun just to kind of fun being a weird description, but an interesting way to think about kind of the world without us.
Coyotes and crows, by the way. That's from your story.
I know. Okay. I know.
That's why I said coyotes.
Oh, really? That's cute. Hey there, MCS. This is number two. Hey there, MCS. Stumbled upon your podcast quite accidentally. Was searching for a Killdozer 7-inch, which I didn't find. I don't consider myself a hippie or an environmental person. I mean, I like trees and bears, but I don't exactly do anything to help them. Well, I don't eat bears, and I've never personally cut a tree down.
Good start.
But I have no doubt my actions since birth have somehow contributed to the death of both bear and tree. More trees than bears. Anyway, something just clicked when I listened. It's not so much that I want to go tie myself to a tree or a bear, but I do feel compelled to stick it to the assholes who have had the ability to make the world a better place for everybody, yet choose to get richer instead. Guess I'm a sinkholer now. I shall take action when needed. Scott N.
Thank you for writing in, Scott.
Yeah,
Scott has been deployed with some various action items. You will not hear from Scott. We are not blogging Scott.
But
he will not appear next to a hashtag.
But if you do
Scott
see,
N is fucking motivated.
Yeah, and if you do see a headline that says man tied to a bear running through Minneapolis, it wasn't us.
It wasn't us at all.
All right. Number three, KC and JP, thanks for the laughs. Thank you for your honesty. Peace, R.Y.
RY. Well, we have nothing if honesty, which is that we have no idea what the fuck is going on, and it's confusing, and so we thought we would grab microphones and talk about it.
Yeah, because we were already doing it.
Yeah, talking to ourselves into microphones. We were like, you know, why
we
are
should we plug these in.
Wow, is that why people use them?
We bring them to the grocery store and just pull them out when we're checking out.
Yeah.
How are you doing today, Angela? We should do that.
Just bring the microphones around?
We should. Yeah. All right. One, two, three. Number four. Thank you for your Maximum Carbon Sinkhole podcast. It's easier to stay motivated and working for change when I can listen to someone else talk about the environmental and economic collapse. More people need to be calling jobs bullshit and asking when we can stop paying the mortgage. The first step is to stop pretending it's about the future. It's about now. P.S. I appreciate your comments about Mr. Rogers. I thought I might be the only one who thought that guy was really creepy. You have no idea how close
who
that comes
that from?
To my heart. There was no signature on that one.
We have an anonymous signature. Anonymous. And even if your email address says your name, if you don't list it below, we don't say it.
Number five. The machine and the internet are killing us all. Please do a show about how technology is our biggest fucking enemy.
Fucking yeah.
Screens everywhere. That's all in caps. So I'm supposed to yell it, but I think that's rude. And here I am sitting at my fucking desk, staring at a fucking screen, sending a fucking impersonal communication to people I listen to on the web. Fuck. I am bouncing on the edge of our world and a new world and terrified I'll be stuck in our world for the rest of my life. Ruby S.
Ruby, first of all, nailing the vulgarity needed of the second world.
Yes.
And it felt like a celebration to
that
me.
That was
when you
an
read
artistic
it.
Email.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
Yeah, I felt that it was celebrate. You know, I want to celebrate crushing all these fucking screens and this fucking first world. I'm fucking happy about it. I am fucking happy about the second world. Yeah. I'm fucking happy about it.
Yeah.
I want this fucking
it's
first world
thing.
To crumble.
It's
I want it to go the fuck away.
Yeah, it's time. It's time.
It's a celebration. We don't have to give up shit. We're fucking getting rid of shit.
Yeah.
Spring cleaning, motherfuckers.
Exactly.
Let's do this shit a different way. And we are doing it by saying motherfucking fuck all the fucking time.
Yeah.
As Ruby exemplified there. Ruby, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for writing in.
And then I just wanted to let everybody know, because I've had a few people ask in separate emails about Mike R. And I have had communications with him. And he says hello and fuck everything.
Thank you, Mike R. on assignment. Thank you, Mike R.
So that's it for Feedback Loops. So please, please email. It's awesome. It makes us super happy. And it's nice to know there's other people who fucking care.
Yeah, what kind of weird shit are you doing? How do you find this weird earworm? It's getting fucking strange, man.
Yeah.
So just like fucking, we got to soak in that. And we can't run from it. We got to stare right the fuck at the weirdness.
Yes.
And that's all we're trying to do here, man. Just stare at the weirdness.
Yeah, stare in the weirdness. Be like, look at that weirdness. And hey, should we try this weirdness? This seems like good weirdness. Because I'm somebody who thinks weird is actually a good word.
We're going to stew in it. We're going to mix it up. And we're going to do it together. Even if it's just us trading files over emails of our own voices, which is fine. You heard J.A. do that.
That's right.
You can do that too. If you'd like to be a correspondent, you want to say some dumb funny shit, if you have some art to submit, if you got some stand-up comedy, we'll take it all. Do you have some fake commercials that you want?
Yes. Yes.
This is an open
project. Or real commercials, but not for real things.
Yeah, not for real things.
Also, we will be sneaking out some more information. Sneaking out is probably not the right word, but getting out some more information about some upcoming submissions.
Group projects,
yeah.
We'd like to do some stuff, more stuff with you.
Art,
including literature.
Second world art.
Audio, including visual art, and especially stories. We'd like to hear more stories of dropping out. How are you coping with the fucking world? How are you figuring out ways to live differently? What is your version of the second world life look like? Please email us, as always, carbonsinkhole@protonmail.com. So let's go visualize the future.
Onward, upward, forward, never straight.
And definitely with the copious amounts of the word, fuck.
Fuck.
Fucking A.
Fucking A, bye.
I just gotta be honest with you. I'm not one of them bullshit show business people, man. Who makes believe everything is going okay. You know? Because everything is not going okay.